Studio 360.
You can probably name at least 5 living movie directors off the top of your head. Maybe 10 or 20. They are considered the auteurs. Whether or not they wrote the scripts, the films are considered their vision. But name a TV director. Name 3 TV directors. If you can name 5, you almost certainly work in show business. In television, it's the writing showrunners who get the credit. But directors of episodic TV are considered more a part of the creative team. Particularly in TV comedy, directing is a very collaborative effort. Very few auteurs.
I think it's very unusual when someone can do comedy completely on their own and be hugely successful at it for a long period of time.
This is Beth McCarthy Miller. She is one of the directors of TV comedy. Having apprenticed in the early days of MTV, she then directed Saturday Night Live for a decade during the Will Ferrell, Tina Fey years. And the last 20 years, she's directed episodes of half the best sitcoms on television, including 30 Rock.
Liz Lemon is having a party, and there ain't no party like a Liz Lemon party because a Liz Lemon party is mandatory.
And Parks and Recreation.
There are no consequences to my actions anymore. No matter what I do, literally nothing bad can happen to me. I'm like a white male U.S. senator.
There's also The Mindy Project, The Good Place, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Modern Family, Blackish, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Veep, and lately, The Kaminsky Method.
So how's your love life? You're still seeing, what's her name, Triscuit?
Tristan, and no.
Oh, that's too bad. She was kind of cute.
Well, we didn't have much to talk about. You know, she was half my age.
Listen, half your age is still an old woman.
Fuck you, Norman.
Do the math.
Since most civilians don't really know what a TV director does or how you become one, we decided that Beth McCarthy Miller was the perfect person to explain it all for us.
When you're an episodic television director, you're walking into a show that has a past, it has a present, it has a future, it has a style, it has a look, and most of the time the showrunner, who is the creator of the show, the head writer of the show, is the person that is the keeper of the creativity of the show. And I think your job as the director is to add where you can, but the bottom line is the show still needs to look like the show every week, and the characters need to be true to themselves every week, because otherwise you're not doing your job very well, right?
Right. I get that. And so you have directed big chunks of shows like 30 Rock and Modern Family, more than 20 episodes. But then on shows like The Mindy Project or The Good Place, you do just sort of a walk-on, directing a couple of episodes. How do you get in the groove to be able to direct a show you haven't directed before?
If it's a new show and it hasn't been on the air yet, I ask to get as many of the scripts as I can so I can at least read them and know who the characters are, you know, and see how they've been evolving over the season. And when it's an established show, I try to watch as many of the episodes as I can, and I also ask the showrunner to send me 3 of their favorite episodes. And that way I get an idea what the showrunner likes stylistically on the show, performances that he likes, or he or she likes. How dare I do that? I can't believe I just said he.
And did you stumble into being a television comedy director, or was that a result of your comedic sensibility? Or how does that happen?
It was a tad bit of a stumble. I was working at MTV, and you know, MTV, when I worked there, because I'm an old lady, but when I worked there, I started there in
50-ish, I'm guessing.
I am. I'm 55. But I started as an intern in 1985 when I graduated from college. And when I started working at the studio, I got a job there that fall, was really when MTV started to make TV shows. So it was kind of sink or swim. So when I went to go associate director remote control, they came up to me and said, do you know how to AD a game show? And I said, no. And they're like, figure it out.
Which was an MTV game show. The
exactly.
MTV game show. Yes.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Mara.
Let's go back to Dead or Canadian.
Okay, back to Dead or Canadian. This is 20 points. Betty Davis. Miriam.
Dead.
Dead is correct.
It was super fun. It was a really great time, and you kind of got to explore quite a bit, which I don't think any place now you can do that. So I started directing when I was 25, and I did all kinds of stuff. I did a lot of music. I was very into music, but I was also very into comedy. And I started doing the half-hour comedy hour, and I started Ben Stiller had a show on MTV before he had his show on Fox.
I remember it was a variety sketch show, and here is a bit of him parodying U2.
Have you had your breakfast? Why not try the best? I'm talking about Lucky Clovers. Why don't you put home to the test? And one bowl won't be enough.
And then Jon Stewart had a late night talk show.
It's time to bring out my own personal hero. Please welcome the fabulous William Shatner.
I want so desperately, desperately to belong. If I say man and take my tie off,
then
can
you
I belong
totally
to the group?
Am. Just whoomp, there it is.
Whoomp. Hey man, how are you?
See
it's
that?
Good
man?
To see you, man.
And
hey,
I was doing this thing.
I was a guest on Jon Stewart's late night talk show. That's another story. But yes.
That's awesome. So I did the pilot and I did the three seasons we did at MTV, and then it got picked up for syndication and I left with Jon to do that show full time. And I just always, you know, I gravitated toward funny people.
So
I gravitated toward comedy. Yeah. And then when that show got canceled, I was kind of screwed because I was in New York. It was my first DGA job. I had no contacts. I had no idea. I couldn't go back to MTV.
DGA being the Directors Union.
Yes, sorry. And I was kind of panicking, and I got calls from Letterman was making a directing change at the time, and Saturday Night Live was Davey Wilson, who was their longtime director, was retiring, and it just was a little bit of luck.
Sean Connery, why don't you pick?
Well, the game is afoot. I'll take Anal Bum Cover for $7,000.
Oh, that's an album cover, not Anal Bum Cover.
I'm not going to say risk, but it was a big deal for Lorne to hire me. You know, I was a little cable weasel.
The executive producer, Lorne Michaels.
Yes. But, you know, I certainly wasn't a seasoned network television director.
Right.
And I was young, and he took a big chance on me.
And you were replacing an old legendary dude.
I was replacing a legend. It was really big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult, and I was sick to my stomach a lot. But it was a big deal for him to do that, and I will never, ever forget that. And he put his trust in me, and that's amazing. And he's been hiring me ever since. So.
How did it lay the groundwork or not for doing 30-minute episodic?
Oh, Saturday Night Live taught me everything. It taught me how to block and reblock sketches very quickly. You know, we make changes between dress rehearsal and air, and they make changes during the air show. Also, every week there was somebody new thrown into the mix, and they weren't always comedians.
Right.
They were politicians, and they were musicians,
right.
And they were serious actors.
Sports
and they
figures.
Were,
yeah.
Yeah. And so I think it helped me get different things from different people and how to talk to people and get performances out of them and walk into a different situation every week as an episodic director and meeting a whole new cast of people that have a different skill set and trying to make it work.
You've also, which makes sense given that you did SNL for 11 years, directed a lot of award shows and Super Bowl halftime shows, including the most famous Super Bowl halftime show of all time in 2004.
Aren't I the lucky one?
The Janet Jackson breast exposure.
I did. Nipplegate, I think is what they called it.
A word I won't use, but
right,
I'm happy
sorry.
To have you use it. No, it's my whatever, fussiness. But
wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah, exactly.
How about that?
So that was kind of unintentional comedy.
You could maybe call it comedy. It wasn't at the time.
The FCC received more than 500,000 complaints about that broadcast. CBS was fined $550,000. And then the NFL was asked to refund the $10 million that they had been given to the halftime show sponsor. So Janet says that this is going to be the first and the last time that she ever talks about what happened that day.
How did it feel, literally, at the time?
At the time, when you direct the halftime show at the Super Bowl, you get the field Thursday night only. So you rehearse off stage with the performer, and you only rehearse on the field Thursday night. Uh-huh. And you get like 6 hours, and part of that is just working with the volunteers to build the stage in the amount of time that, you know, because I think you have like 6 minutes from when the halftime whistle blows, the commercials, coming back to the people, and then all of a sudden you're doing the halftime show. So you have to rehearse everything in like 6 hours. So, you know, it's a feat. And also you can bring a certain amount of your own cameras, but you also need to use, the game cameras. So I had camera 1 and camera 55, and I had camera 4 and camera 36. So it's kind of crazy when you're directing that. And when that actually happened.
Five times. Ho!
That's a bad one. It was supposed to be a tearaway skirt that in rehearsal kept falling. It was like Velcro, and it kept coming apart during Rhythm Nation. And Jana had told me they may not even do it. And I said, well, I'm going to be on a head-to-toe shot. You just let me know if it's not going to happen. So I never heard anything else. I was on a head-to-toe shot. And I was basically cutting to that shot for like 2.5 seconds, then cutting to a wide shot and cueing a huge pyrotechnic extravaganza in the stadium. So I'd cut to that camera, and I was looking at my next camera and cueing things, and I heard everyone behind me gasp. And I was like, what? What happened? Did I cut to the wrong camera? I didn't even see it.
And did you just carry on? I mean, it wasn't the end.
Well, I finished. Yeah. And we went and I rolled everything and we got out. And then everyone just sat, you know, kind of dumbfounded in the truck.
Did you get any of the blame?
I was deposed.
Deposed, really? As a legal thing?
Yeah.
Huh. To me, it's crazy. I mean, you know, I don't know if it would be different 15 years later or not. But like that was as big a deal as this. Like,
it's nuts what it did, and it's nuts what how it changed the future of television for quite a while.
In what
sense? Everything had to be on like 7 second delays, you know, it got a little nutty for a while after that.
Yeah, it's before we had a president giving speeches where he says, "That's bullshit."
They're trying to take you out with bullshit.
I know. God bless him.
Yeah. Did you work with Donald Trump?
I did.
Yeah? How was he as a performer?
I'm sure you can probably guess.
No, I can't. Tell me.
You can't?
He's not going to send you to jail. How was he? Fine.
He was
easy.
Exactly the way you would expect him to be.
Uh-huh.
You would ask him to do something. He would say no. And then he'd say, this is what I'm going to do. And then he'd repeat what you just asked him to do.
Oh,
huh. And I'd say, great idea, Mr. Trump.
Oh, so that's the secret to dealing with the president. Interesting. You should direct him as president.
Oh,
I
don't think I have it in me.
Mindy Kaling said recently in an interview that television seemed to be a place where lately more and more women are directing these days as compared to motion pictures. Is that true in your experience?
That is very true. There has been a very huge shift, and there's been a very big effort by the Directors Guild of America, by showrunners and studios to hire more women.
Is that because we now are at peak TV with 400 scripted shows, so there's just more room, or why is that?
I think because it was so unbelievably bad before, and there were so few female directors that they have made a concerted effort to try to promote women and get more women in the director's chair.
So when you started in the 90s, you were the only woman around?
No, I don't think so, but I think there were very few. But I mean, there are the women that were around are, you know, out of my peers, you know, Pam Fryman is an unbelievable, half-hour director. And Gail Mancuso is an amazing half-hour director. And, you know, look at the women that are doing dramas now between, Leslie Linka Glatter is just, she's ridiculous.
But in a way, I mean, just those names, and I'm sure you could go on with a dozen more, is different than film.
I mean,
the list of women of that stature in movies would be one hand, right?
But you know what? Back when I was watching comedy movies, which I loved, and I was a kind of a comedy nerd, you know, I loved the John Hughes movies, but think about it, Amy Heckerling did Clueless, right? Martha Coolidge did Valley Girl. There were some Penelope Spheres.
Who made Wayne's World.
So there were some women.
It kind of got worse.
That were doing, yeah.
After the 80s and 90s.
And they were doing, like, fantastic, amazing, very successful comedy movies.
Yeah, not to mention Nora Ephron.
Nora, yeah. Come on.
Well, Beth McCarthy Miller, this has been both enlightening and a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, good.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Beth McCarthy Miller is now at work directing the second season of The Kominsky Method on Netflix.